These are stories of women, mothers, and enterprises filled with grit, gumption, and overcoming. Where in the midst of adversity, we see her rise up. She makes a choice. She chooses to emerge. I'm your host, Becca Erickson. Hey, everybody. So glad you're with us on the To Emerge podcast. Today, I have with us Portland, Oregon gal, Jenny Wren Stotrup. And without doing much damage to what she actually does out in Portland, I'm going to let her take that over. But I do want to say, fellow comrades, that she is a Midwestern girl. That's why she gets to be on this podcast. Woo! But Jenny, I will let you kind of explain more about what you're doing out there with Gritty Birds and tell us about you.
Yeah, so I am a content creator. I'm an audio engineer. I'm a musician. So what I do is I help people really make big, think about their content in new ways. I help people with their audio and their sound. And I also create music and podcasts. So that's been what I've been doing for the last few years. And I've been doing this full time for the last 6 months with my company, Gritty Birds Podcasting.
So were you into the podcasting world before it became like all the rage?
No, I came in. There's a certain like moment where it really shifted and everyone can literally dial it down to serial. I was on podcasts before that as an artist and as a musician. It meant that when I was putting out my record, I was on them. I've been creating content since I was really little though. So I had been doing like photojournalism, blogs. I had also been recording, but I hadn't put the two together. So even at that point, I don't think I even did like vlogs or any of that before that. So it was after my record came out and after I was on a bunch of podcasts that that happened. And that was the time that Gimlet did Startup, which was just a really inspiring show for me as far as like the side of setting up a show. And that was also the year after Serial came out. And there was a huge change in the industry at that point because a lot of, I would listen to shows, but it was like, I'd listen to Radiolab, but it would be on the iTunes library because it was just the show that aired for it. And it wasn't in this, I didn't see it in the same way until I started going on these internet shows. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is really, really neat. And then I actually got into it because broadcasters reached out and they're like, you have a really amazing voice for radio and you have a very precise, clear way of explaining things because I was an elementary teacher, right? And because I've been speaking since I was really young and done like political science and stuff, like I knew how to, and I'd studied media, I knew how to like get things to the point, which is sort of one of the benefits when you're in radio because you don't want to cut too much. I launched it just as a podcast and then at the second season, I got picked up at radio again. And the show still has always been a podcast. And for a long time, I felt weird being on both of them, but most of the people that I help are podcasters. And then I also happen to be a producer at our radio station, which is an independent, you know, nonprofit kind of station
Sure.
in town.
Yeah. So what's kind of the premise of Gritty Birds? Like, what is someone going to hear?
So Gritty Birds is the show that really taught me everything that I know. And that's, it's a narrative podcast, which means that you are going into that format of what you're experiencing in NPR. I mean, when I was growing up, I would go up north about every month, sometimes more, heading up to the cities and up north from there to see all of our family. Dad's family was up at Askove, and then mom's family is over Stillwater Bayport. And so you'd listen to stories, right? So my show is I'd interviewed artists, and then the artists, I took those stories that they told me and I put them into, I like clip edited and cut it into stories where I'm letting them know, people know about how they did the things they did, where they came from, where they're heading in this like 30 minute, like, piece that kind of has an arc. And then lately I've been doing more where it's like a couple different people featured, and the fourth season's gonna be coming out later this fall before I move on to whatever the fifth season looks like, and we'll see what that is. But mostly right now I'm helping create for a lot of other shows and helping them, so it's pretty cool.
Sure.
That's been an amazing arc I didn't expect.
Right, contract work. Right. It means that you're kind of like the expert in your realm, which means you've achieved something.
I am. It was kind of amazing because I actually spoke at She Podcasts Live on Sunday, where I spoke about narrative podcast content editing, because, you know, you can probably find that in some of the more journalism based or radio based, but there isn't a whole lot of people who are explaining how to do this in the content sphere. There's people who are talking storytelling because there is a ton of different ways that you can have your podcasts, but As far as like talking narrative to the podcast community, I am one of the people that is doing that. Like that is very specifically me and the editors communities. They're like, I don't even know what you do. I'm like, I can show you.
That's so awesome. Yeah. Right. It just kind of puts you in your own little seal, a step above. For the sake of emerging, you know, it's a podcast about women who rise up both in their personal life and in their enterprise. Will you take us into just the years of building this and then the times where there was so much adversity or the times you tripped up yourself?
Yeah. Well, the emerging of me into podcasts is actually a huge part of that. So when I moved out to Portland, like the economy had crashed. I was performing up in Seattle and I loved it, but I was also, you know, hitting end of money. It was really hard to find jobs. And it was a moment where mom and dad were like, we loved being teachers. What if we helped you go back to school? So I went to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I got a master's in Montessori education from AMI, and which is like the one that Maria Montessori founded. So like the kind of more intense version of when you look at the Montessori world. And when I got back, I started teaching, but I really started kind of missing performing. And so I consider myself to be a project manager. So I kind of started putting together some festivals and some big events and built a record. And that record ended up happening after I lost my job, because the school that I was at, you know, they were embezzling funds, and it meant that funds that were supposed to go to teachers, and a lot of it was more mismanagement. Oh, no. And I was like devastated. So I got back into performing, but there was also just some like personal things that were going on in my family that I wasn't talking about. And I had a few years where I just really put the pedal to the metal as far as performing, but I started to kind of lose myself. And one day I was on the stage at the Doug Fir Lounge, and it was I was headlining a night at a really well-known venue in Portland at a big soul festival. And I had a panic attack and nobody noticed, but I did. And I said to myself, I can't perform for a while and I need to figure out like what's going to happen. And this was actually sort of the beginning of a process that took a few years, because I still wasn't really talking to anyone about what was going on with me personally. And I was having moments of disassociation. I was having panic attacks. I eventually got diagnosed with PTSD, and like I had to figure out what to do about it. So my show, there was this moment and the show was going, but I was really tired. And one day I was just starting to get really frustrated. I was noticing things about my show. It was really starting to get exhausting for me. I knew I needed actual like paid work, and this show, because I was working nonprofit through a station, it's just like I was ready for a growth spurt, but I also knew that I needed a pause. I didn't know what that would look like. And a friend of mine that had posted something on the internet about how he had assaulted a woman and how bad he felt. And I just got pissed. And it was like early in the morning, and I messaged and was like, how dare you? And I shared that I had been assaulted, and I didn't share all my story. And that's still not something I do very often, but it ended up being me and a ton of other women in Portland. This was 3 years ago. So this was like right before like the shift had begun in the United States, but it was right before that like huge shift. Cause it just started spattering everywhere. You started seeing it everywhere. And I posted that and then started talking to a bunch of media, but then my show shifted. And I went from where I have mostly male audience, I was mostly talking to men, to starting to really shift to stories of women. But they were also, a lot of them, really heavy stories about women. So it meant that like even the conversations I was having were heavier, and a lot of it was bigger, and I was having conversations with people about real issues. And that was hard. So about 6 months after that, I actually took a break from my show, like a long break. And I went ahead and just had to stop for a while. And I made the decision to pause. I did a Kickstarter to build a studio. I got a new job. I started working in pro audio just to really get to know audio better, and spent 2 years just working in retail. And I built myself up to the point where I was like the number one woman in retail sales for Guitar Center in the Northwest. Eventually, I started getting that little nudging feeling like I miss performing. I miss creating my show. And when my aunt Iris died last December, her husband was a 3M executive, helped form a certain like a tape, and they owned the Sherrard Marina over in Stillwater. I sat there and I said, okay, my life's not getting any less and I really need to make a shift. And I made the decision that I was going to leave my job. I'd already started my production company at this point. I had just said to myself, I'll work at Guitar Center for a while. It'll take a couple of years. I'll really build it. And I sped up the plan and I said, we're doing this. And in February, I told them I was going to go part-time. And in April, I completely left. I headed back to Minnesota. I had eye surgery. We laid her to rest. And then I was on my own. And it's crazy. 6 months later, I'm speaking on a main stage at She Podcast Live. I have an amazing crew of podcasters that I'm working with. It's been an amazing journey. We're working on the next record with the co-producer that I worked with on my last one. You know, I've got performance engagements coming up. I'm teaching lessons again. A lot of therapy, a lot of really approaching like what I was going through and a lot of healing. That's a lot in a really short amount of period, but I finally broke loose of a lot of the expectations that I needed to do. And it was when I said, I'm just going to do it. And I'm not going to do it because I want to prove anything to anyone else, but because my brain works that way. And I like creating content. And I know how to organize it and I get how to do it. And being able to finally like just believe in that and not question anymore, like really opened up the gates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of it was, you know, in process, you had to take the risk, or were you like, I'm pretty well healed at this point to take the risk?
Actually, no. March was really difficult. Heading into that, I was very, very questionable about it because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. I was having extreme anxiety because I was working 40 hours a week plus traveling, plus getting ready for all these things. I was working 60 hours a week. Yeah. So, and I knew that I still had work to get done in those areas. And for me, it's always going to be a piece of work. I don't feel that it'll ever be like fully healed because I don't know there is a point because it's kind of like, you know, you rip off a Band-Aid or you finish a project. It's still a part of your whole conversation. Yeah. It's still a part of you. And I think in sharing storytelling, we have to remember that everything that informs our current being can be something that goes back really, really far. And we don't have to tell the whole piece of the story, but that part of the story is still a part of me. So there's going to be moments, especially in content and creating stories or working with women or working with people who are telling their stories, where I'm going to relate to something that's going to bring it up. But what I've started to build more of is resiliency. And that's the difference. And finding the ways that I can keep resilient.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think the people that overcome are the people who had easy lives. I think it's the people who are so resilient and they take agency over themselves that they're the ones that decide like, I'm going to go right through a March into an April and then that's when I'm going to make it.
Yeah. And you might make it 7 months later, or it might be making it might mean different for one person than it does for another.
Totally.
It could just be, oh my gosh, I paid all my bills this month.
Yes.
And I have it figured out for the next few. That could be enough. Or it could be something small because all those markers are just markers and they're different for each person.
Right. Yeah. And like you said, each of those start accumulating and they inform who we are today.
Yeah.
You know, and even if it is these like bite-sized measurable things where it's like, look at that. I got out of bed every day. I paid my bills each month. It's like, oh, we didn't celebrate those things. We got caught up in like, boss babe, hustle, you know, make a name for yourself. Like, wait a second. What if not everyone's going for that?
Yep. Absolutely.
Some of us just have small goals and we just want to, you know, change the life of one person, not 1,000.
Yeah. Especially, you know, your shows about merge, mothers, women. One of the big takeaways I took from Podcast Movement, that's one place, but from She Podcast specifically, it's like out in the audience, you know, it was half to 2/3 of mothers, people who are in their businesses and they are maternal figures to somebody in their life or to their own children. And it is a bigger picture when you have kids. And even though I don't have children, I have friends who have children. You know, I was a Montessori teacher. I have children I'm very, very close with. You know that at the end of the day, if the rest of it goes wrong, there's still somebody that counts on you and you have to have perspective around that.
Right. If you're not going to do the generative work of, you know, making your life fruitful and growing, right? You do. You lose perspective of like, oh yes, I just want all the money and all the wealth and all the fanfare. And it's like, well, wait a second, you got little eyes watching you.
Yeah, but even as a human, that can be really lonely. And I've had periods where I'm so full with the things I'm doing or the things I'm working toward, all of a sudden I look back and I'm like, I haven't hung out with a friend in 2 weeks. And that's concerning because that's concerning.
Normally that's life-giving to be with a friend. Why have I stripped myself of life?
Yeah, yeah. And whatever that balance looks like is noting that, making a note of that, and then looking forward and saying, can I say no to these three things? Or what's one thing I can take off my plate? Right? And that's the same thing in creating content. It's like, I want to tell my whole story. That's great. Where are you losing people? And that same thing can be said in the way that you're having your process, because you can lose people. Like literally, you just haven't reached back to a friend in a while. And you're like, oh no, I lost them because they weren't a part of your narrative anymore. But you can head back and contact them in and figure out ways that they can fit into your life, whether it's a coffee that you have once a month or, you know, some way that they're a part of that. And same with storytelling. It's like or you can also cut people out and say, this is not serving me anymore. This is actually hurting me. And I need to recognize that this is something that's not working for me, whatever that is, and how that can make the other pieces have a little more space. Recapturing your energy is a big thing that I learned after working and teaching, and as I was finding some healing at one point, it was just you need to find those places to recapture energy, because we do put out a lot, but taking those spaces so that we feel re-energized so that we can be able to give again is key, because we have to have our well full.
Yeah, for sure, right? You can't give out an empty well. There's nothing to give.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, you know, without sharing names or anything, but can you tell me a time you interacted with someone else's narrative or you pieced together a beautiful way of sharing it and it still sits with you? Like that one person's story will never leave you.
Yeah, there was a show that I had. I think I forget the exact. For a show that I pieced together for my show. And I can name this. David Bazan, I really, really appreciated him. And he has a documentary coming out because I think he's an amazing storyteller in the first place. So it was very easy to tell his story in one piece. But it was also really moving because he's gone through a lot and he's had some like huge revelations. And the other one was a band called Modern Savage. And her story is incredibly moving. And for her to be able to come and share that was very, very heavy because she had gone through a lot of abuse. And since then, she's like had kids. They've actually broken up as a band, but they found some other formations around it. But I think that one was really challenging for me to edit because it was just so emotionally and so well-spokenly told. But it also was not... It was very heavy content. It is interesting being a storyteller, a musician, talking to other storytellers because they do have a certain vision around it. But being able to sort of move those pieces around and kind of tell something a little more specific is really special. But yeah, those are the two that are standing out right now that just I can listen to those episodes back. And, you know, you always want to listen back to your content, but I really have used those as examples a lot when I'm telling other people my stories or when I'm talking about a framework or a script and sort of some of the key things of where we had this long piece and took it out and where we were able to say, this is how we got specific here to tell their story and how I had fluff to get their information out and how I cut those things to be able to really... Sure. Get something that had emotion in it that people connected with and made a lot of commentary on afterward.
Yeah, it takes a lot of creativity. I mean, it's your form of art.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Will you take us into whatever season it was that was the hardest, you know, after your aunt or after assault or just trying to figure out who you are now in the Northwest instead of a Midwestern girl? We talked shortly about resilience, but can you take us into this season where you're like, who in the world is Jenny? And like, how did you come out of it?
It was the spring when I was making the show, and I was living down in this apartment in South Division. And it was the year that I was really intense in making Gritty Birds weekly and regularly. And it was actually kind of the spring to winter before. There was like, it's kind of hard to figure out when. I was teaching. I was really burnt out. I didn't quite know who I was at that point because I was back in teaching, but I felt like I really failed as a human because the teaching job didn't work out, and I forced myself into Gritty Birds to try to make something work. But what I experienced in that whole year is that I feel like I disconnected from a lot of people, and a lot of people didn't quite relate to what was happening anymore because I was always working. I was constantly working on my show. But I was also going through some major mourning and some like extreme grief. And it was 2 months on or a month off and a month on, and there'd be moments that were really great. And then there was like, it would be like a month that was just so bad. And it did take this point where it was heading into Treefort. And when I was at Treefort, the first day I interviewed somebody and I got so nervous that I was like, I can't do this anymore. And right after, a woman says, everybody in Portland hates you. And I was so devastated. And I was like, what do you mean everyone in Portland hates you? And after that, I had trouble like even being in town around people. And I felt like I'd wasted my life for a while. And
why did she say that?
I don't, you know, it's something that I guess I don't really, I unfortunately can't ask because we lost her last year. And in that challenge in her life, I think that there was a lot of struggle. I think for me at that time, she did have a feeling on the sense that there were things I needed to attempt and that I was trying to mask. I think she was legitimate there. I think that I desperately needed a break. I remember saying, I can't take a break for another month because I have this thing next weekend and this thing next weekend and this thing next weekend. And this is occasionally happening. A friend was like, you have to take a break. The station was like, we fully support you. And I'm like, I have to pause. And everyone was like, okay, then take it. Like, you know, I think I took a couple mental health moments, but it was finally just saying like, I have to put myself first and I have to deal with this. And I went into EMDR and I got psychotherapy. And that was really hard, but it was what I needed to do to be able to recapture my life. And I'd like to say that that's when things got immediately, you know, but I lost friends, things shifted. And now I'm in a really great place 2 years later. And, you know, it was part of that journey and that struggle that allowed me to become who I am on this side and to understand that it's about bridges. It's not, even to the people I don't understand or have those feelings, it's not about like cut that person out, they're toxic, cut out this thing, or I'm mad at them forever. It's like, what are the bridges that I can make for healing toward those things, even if I never speak to them? What are the bridges that I can make to understand people I don't understand? You know, what are the bridges I can have so that I can continue being a more empathetic person? And where are the boundaries so that I'm not just putting it all out in the end of the day?
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. It is smart. It's good to keep people in your life at a certain boundary that's, you know, that's going to uplift your process. Like you had to go, I mean, EMDR, you went into some memories and had to like reconcile them to who you are.
Yeah. You
know? I think that's a lot of very good insight into, I mean, sociologically, people are very complex and dynamic, but just as a general rule, like how can you balance things through a bridge model rather than a complete cutout model? And then what's healthy? What's a healthy boundary for you, the subjective person? You know, it's not an objective formula. Sorry.
Right.
Well, thank you for sharing all of this with us. Congratulations on, you know, podcasts and speaking and just the way that you've, you know, taken a quarter turn and you've redefined what your life is going to be. So it's awesome to see.
Thank you. It was so nice to meet you. And thanks for having me on.
Likewise. Thank you, Jenny.
Looking forward to your next episodes.
The 2 Emerge podcast is brought to you by Emerge Mothers Academy. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave us a positive review. A special thanks to our media manager, Laurel Goulson, and to Jessica Manning for our music.